Hello, welcome to the F1 show, the show from the British Tech Network that deals with the ongoing saga of F1 through 2012. Six winners in six races, the first time it's ever happened before. And we had Monaco, if you're Stirling Moss. And this week, we're slightly light on panellists, no idea why. But me, Sarah, Steve, and are here to talk about it.
And the chat room.
The chat room are going to pund it as well, so definitely. Best season in a decade, says Jinx. There you go, so that's the opening comment. Mr. Neighbour, you're first to see us. How you doing, mate?
Pretty good, yeah. Well, yeah, not too bad at all. The UK weather is amazing at the moment, so been enjoying that and enjoying the Grand Prix. And we could just lie and say that the other panellists are in Monaco and they flew out there on their helicopters and went to see it.
Yeah, we've got them roving reporters. That's the thing. Definitely.
Except they're not reporting.
No, not at all. No. Those dulcet tones are Sarah Gray. How you doing, Mrs?
I'm very well, thank you very much. Hi, everyone.
And you've watched the show in Bonnie Island?
I did. Yes, my new semi-residence over here now, so I'm going to be spending lots of time over here. So I think I've got the setup just about right now. So
we better get used to it, right?
Yes, definitely.
The week in F1, it's the Monaco Grand Prix, which... I know, I was going to say the jewel in the crown, but is that a bit of a leap? I mean, before the thing happened, I thought to myself, is Monaco becoming a bit of an irrelevance? Is it not a decent enough Grand Prix? And then I saw all the hype and all the buzz and all the celebrities around it and that kind of stuff. And then I saw the race today and thought, yeah, it's not worth it. But it's kind of like Augusta, isn't it? You can't take it off the schedule because it's that jewel in the crown. Anyone else think that it should go?
Definitely. I've always thought that.
Oh, blimey. Go on, Sarah.
It's my least favourite race of the year, and I don't think any other track it would survive because the regulation... They seem to see past the regulations in terms of the safety aspects. You would not be allowed to have crash barriers that close to the track anywhere else in the world.
I don't think it's unsafe particularly, though, is it?
I just think it's an accident waiting to happen. I really do. And sooner or later, someone is going to get seriously injured and then somebody will start to question it.
Well, okay, you've had Patrick Tambor fly over the top of Martin Brundle, haven't you, a couple of years ago? They showed that one on Sky today. Steve, you're voting for it. Go on, tell us why.
I think it's good having somewhere that's historically glamorous in the age of our Dubais and our Abu Dhabis and our Singapores, which are amazing and glitzy. It's quite good having something that's traditional and just a glamorous race, even though it's a bit rubbish track in terms of no passing and whoever starts it is generally going to be the person that comes to finish it first. But I must admit, if I went to see one of the Grand Prix, that would be on my list to go see, of all the Grand Prix I've not seen.
You'd go for the piss up, mate. You wouldn't go for the racing. You'd just sat there with a set of earplugs on, dropping a PIMS.
If you want the history.
A PIMS at probably £14 or whatever it is.
Well, at least. I don't even think that's going to get close, mate. Your cup of tea would be more than that.
I mean, if you're worrying about the history, you've got Monza, you've got Silverstone... you've got
1929, though.
Bonza's, been around nearly as long.
I love street circuits.
Yeah, so do I, and that's why I love Singapore. They've built a lot more safety aspect into it, and it's the safety aspect that makes me, and it also makes for a very boring race. Because, as you say, it's a bit of a procession. Look at Button trying to get past Kovalainen today. It's a classic example. It's not good from a spectator's point of view, as, when you compare some of the other tracks, it's not good from a safety point of view. And I just think that it's an example of where money talks.
Yeah. Okay,
I've got a question for you.
Go on.
How much is the following package to go to Monaco for the following, okay? I'm reading this from, I won't tell you the website because you'll find it while I'm trying to. So your question is, how much will this be for the package?
Okay.
4 nights at the Les Vergres Hotel, 4 breakfasts, this is per person, welcome reception party, weekend grandstand tickets, casino square and harbourfront, Coach transfers to circuit on Saturday and Sunday. Cannes Film Festival tour on Friday morning. Pit Lane tour on Friday afternoon. Sunday celebration dinner at Alla Laurenti restaurant and Moto Express hospitality. How much per person for a
20K
twin room?
20K.
Does that include transport to and from there? Sorry, Steve, I didn't hear that bit at the beginning.
I can't tell you if it... What's not included is flights.
Okay.
Go on, I have no idea. I mean, I've guessed a figure there that's ridiculously high, obviously, but...
£1,950.
That's pretty good.
Four nights.
Drinks are on top. And,
drinks will be on top, so that will probably take it...
So that's, that's 20 grand, yeah. There you go. That's it.
I'd love to go and see what the atmosphere is like. And to tell you why I'm attracted to it is because I saw the Formula One when they came down to Regent Street. So they raced up and down. Well, they raced up and down Regent Street, and the sound, because you had the shops either side, which are probably only level four levels or so. The sound of the F1s was amazing compared to the sound that you get at Silverstone, because it's quite open at Silverstone. So I just love the attraction of that closed in circuit feel.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, before the British Grand Prix, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2003.
Well, of course, we used to have a race here in Birmingham. We had the GP3000, didn't we? For years, that was on. And they used to race it up around through the centre of the street and then up to the to Highgate and back again. The curbing was still there until a couple of years back. And they haven't run it for 15, 20 years, perhaps. But there is something nice about street racing, definitely, but it's very noisy. Yeah. I mean, I'm 7 miles out of the city centre and I can hear it when it was on. So it's very big and it's very bold and it's brassy, but as a race, it's just not good enough. I mean, there's comments in the chat room here. It's all about the money. When the money starts pouring in from being there, then it'll disappear, aka career, which is absolutely right. Absolutely.
I think we would have not been criticising the races probably as much as we will do, though, if it had rained properly like it did after the race.
Well, I've started gauging my entire response to F1 now by the Xbox game. I did it this year because I figured, right, I don't know enough about the courses and the technical stuff to keep up with Woodsy and Tone. So I'm going to go and get the thing out and I'm going to drive around. And I've done every single race up to this point and a couple beyond. And it's actually really useful. Especially when you've got a steering wheel. So I bought a steering wheel so I could actually do the thing. And I play it on this 37-inch TV, so it's right in front of me. And Monaco is not much tighter than, Bay? At Marina Bay, the one at Singapore. And the one at Singapore at Marina Bay, I hate that. The triple chicane, the whole thing, it's horrible. But the one thing I noticed about racing around Monaco compared to the other tracks that I'd done up to that point is that it's the cars go very side to side. You're whipped right and whipped left and whipped right and whipped left an awful lot. There's a lot of fast chicane work and that kind of thing. And I thought the tyres would take a hell of a battering today, but lo and behold, they're doing 39 laps, Vettel did 45 laps on his, didn't he? Mm-hmm.
Which game are you playing there?
F1, the official
2011?
No, I've only got 2010. I've got 2012 coming as soon as it's released, but it's not released yet. I think I get that after the British Grand Prix.
That tyre usage is purely down to the fact that it's the slowest track of the year.
Well, you'd have thought if you're slow and it's whipping left and right, it's causing problems with drifting and it's causing scrubbing of the tyres. And then also, you're laying down power very quickly to try and accelerate quickly. You'd have thought that would have scrubbed a lot more than it actually has.
No, I think it's just, I was surprised that there were so few tyre changes as there were today. I really did think that there would be more.
Especially the Supersoft.
But I wasn't expecting... Yeah, exactly, especially as a Supersoft. And I think that's the first time we've really seen those this year, because they really, most of them have been the hard tyres and the soft tyres, the yellow and the white ones. But it was, it was quite surprising, actually.
And just in case if anyone wants to take the team here on the trip to Monaco, the four-day trip, it's Moto Express. If I read out their details, I think I'll probably need to say where it came from. So that's the offer for next year if anyone wants to treat us.
Right, jolly good. And you're not peeing there for the audio listeners, you're pouring a cup of tea. Jesus.
Yeah, that's my cup of tea. Sorry.
Right, controversy at the start then, before the race had even got going. They were talking about the hole in the skirt of the Red Bull R8. So here's a picture of it. It's pretty minuscule, it has to be said. And I can't see what real benefit it gets from it aerodynamically at all, let alone on the track there. And I think that the one word that's come out is that it's an interesting interpretation of the rule, unquote. And you can see the way it differs from the last year's car is that it steps down. So you've actually got the valance perfectly level, and then the step down has got the cut out of it. So there's an argument that it's a separated piece. It's an additional piece on there. I mean, again, Jenks in the chat room saying you've got to see it in a wind tunnel to know the difference. And a lot of them were saying that aerodynamics played absolutely no part whatsoever this week.
No, it won't today. But the one thing I thought was quite interesting, in an interview with Jake Humphrey on the BBC coverage after the race, Adrian Newey said that they've actually got a letter from the FIA saying it's legal.
Mm.
But they don't understand what the issue is.
Well, I mean, the issue is the fact that it says that you can't cut anything out on that skirt, from what I understand, but they've had it looked at, and it's been there all season, pretty much. So, have you heard anything else, Steve? Or
I know they've got a meeting tomorrow to discuss it. I mean, the Red Bull team did seem pretty confident that they didn't believe there was any issues with it. But I know that Ferrari and McLaren are also kind of considering a process for it. We'll see.
We shall see indeed. Never mind. All the storm and take-up, according to...
Yeah, it's hardly double diffuser territory, is it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Brundle said this is not a non-issue. This is something that has to be addressed, so it could be. Could be. And off the track as well, Hamilton, not happy. Seems like people are throwing things at him.
Is that what he was saying through the race then, that there were people throwing?
I've read the interview that he's put in afterwards, and effectively what was happening was Red Bull and one of the other teams were shoving out their pit board, and because they only used flimsy cards, the cards were coming out and were hitting his helmet. They were bouncing off his helmet. I don't think they're insignificant in terms of size either. I think it's not him being a bit of a wuss. But also as well, I mean, you'd have thought if you had a piece of paper that stuck to your visor, that would be pretty horrific.
Yeah, that's kind of speed.
You would have thought they should risk assess that and take that straight out in the design of the boards.
Well, you can't understand why it's not. They haven't got like a wind-out system or something for each of the pit crews that they can mount off the pit wall, and that's electronic. It'd be far easier.
I think this is another aspect that shows how small that track is. DC actually did he took us around the back of the McLaren garage, which is unlike any other track, where they actually go out the back of the garage to hang the pit boards out onto the track. And you could virtually touch the car, which normally any other track, there's quite a bit of a gap between, because the track's so wide, you don't normally have that problem. And I think that was really part of the problem. What I don't really understand is why it only affected Lewis Hamilton, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's a comment from Jenks in the chat room saying it could just be Newey messing with the other team. Just, you know, just screwing with their brains, which it could be. I've got to say, having raced around Marina Bay this morning on Xbox, it doesn't feel any wider than Monaco does. I hate it. I really hate it as a track. Monaco, I won at Monaco, so... And it felt nice. It was great, but it's all about the pit stop. If you're not on pole, you can't win. I mean, I tried having a deliberately sort of qualifying halfway back through the field, and that start is just a melee. I mean, the computer system was crashing cars ahead of me. I wasn't causing it, and I was swerving through them. And did you see the start for the GP2?
No.
Oh, man, they got one of the Chicotta was off up in the air and over the back of another car, and... They had a right old spin this morning. There was sort of 10 cars, and effectively the whole lane was blocked while the rest of them sped off. And then the safety car ended up coming out for sort of 5 or 6 laps.
Safety car? They should have red flagged it for that.
I thought they should have red flagged it. I really thought they should have red flagged it. But I've got to say as well that when they came round again for the first lap under the safety car, there was only one car still on the track out of all of the ones that they had to lift clear, and that was gone the next time around, and the safety car went in. It was very good.
At the start of the Grand Prix, we saw Grosjean and Maldonado's car being lifted off, and they, you know, I was talking about it with the people I was watching the race with, and I was saying that they are superb, probably best in the world at actually getting the stuff off the track, and that's obviously part of the issue with, you know, being able to race there, that they have to be good at it. But, you know, they are superb at that, and, you know, they do a great job. You know, they should be congratulated for that.
Yeah. They just stick a kind of 20-ton crane on every single section of the track, don't they?
Well, they've got huge reaches. I mean, when you saw Maldonado's being winched, they showed a picture of from Maldonado's onboard camera, and he was up level with the top of a skyscraper, and it spun, panned round. And it, I know they're wider field, but it pointed down to the boom, and the boom was hugely extended. It was a long, long way back.
I thought my TV had gone on the blink
for that bit. I thought I'd turned over and started watching Chitty Chitty Bang Bang the way that thing was flying.
So what about Maldonado? Did he grow an ego during the week?
He was just awful this weekend, wasn't he?
Well, I mean, he looked like he deliberately hit Perez yesterday. Because, I mean, the one thing you've got to say is we've got a clear definition now on grid penalties, haven't we? With Schumacher, you cock up, it's 5. You deliberately hit them, it's 10. I mean, that was a hell of a punishment.
And then Hamilton, he took another 5. You go to the back of the grid.
Well, no, he didn't register a time, which is slightly different. That's not a grid penalty, is it? Maldonado lost 5 grid places as well for a gearbox change today. So he started at 23rd.
I think he kind of figured that he had nothing to lose by that point. Oh,
exactly. And when he rammed it into the wall on the first corner, you got to say that was pretty much it anyway. But he came on the TV and said, the car turned in. I didn't expect him to be where he was. I didn't see it. It wasn't deliberate. And Brundle was saying, I don't buy that. I don't buy that at all. He knew what he was doing. He kind of half looked to see that he was going to do it. He intended to give him a tap because he was pissed off him for letting him through. There was blue flag problems as well all through the GP2. The blue flags weren't coming out fast enough. And yesterday, I thought during qualifying, the blue flags didn't come out enough.
They were on that today, though. The blue flags were absolutely on it today. Somebody had given them a rollicking.
Yeah, no, I mean, the blue flags didn't come out at all for the first race in GP2. They were really, really slack on it. And there was a lot of people, the commentator was saying, this isn't good enough. So I think they must have had a talking to. And yesterday, that same qualification, there was definitely nothing.
I got quite excited during qualification at one point.
did you soil your pants?
I was in the park, actually. Never. I was watching it in the park on the iPad, and it was when I thought Vettel wasn't going to make it through qualifying two. Mm. I think it was his last lap into qualifying that got him through to the third session, but he almost didn't get through at all. And just like Button didn't. Which was disappointing for him.
Yeah, I mean, McLaren have got a real problem at the moment, haven't they?
Yeah, they don't seem to have the team or the car. They've also had some bad luck. I mean, Hamilton's had some bad luck.
Rotten. But, Jensen goes back and screws with the car and comes out and it's worse. And the things that they think are supposed to be better. And Hamilton's just had some bad luck and he's throwing it around like Billio and doing really, really well. But then, you know, today's cock-up, 0.6 of a second slower getting him out, and lo and behold, you know, it's the difference between him and Vettel and Alonso being ahead, and that's it.
Yeah,
you know, 0.6, right. Man. And I thought there was one pit stop as well for Shuey. Shuey's first pit stop was 3.2 seconds, which I was quite impressed with. That was very, very good. Very fast. The race, then. What did we think to the race overall?
It was a bit...
At the start was, I love that. I like that start. Having that many cars go through that such a tight space is an exciting situation. And also, we've missed the pit walk. Were you not excited to see Antonio Banderas there and Will Smith? You can tell they've got movies out, can't you?
Have they? What were they promoting? Ron Howard, he was there filming, though, to be fair.
Well, he was there talking about the film that he's made with James
about James Hunt.
The 1976 season with James Hunt and Niki Lauda.
Mm.
Does that seem a bit like, Senna was good, wasn't it? Senna did well. I'm going to make a film about F1 as well. Oh, who can I make a film? Oh, no, done Senna. Who's next? Ah, James Hunt. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Senna's was all documentary footage, though, wasn't it? Whereas this isn't. This is actors playing the parts.
Yeah.
So it's a bit more dramatic.
this is about the season when Lauda had his big accident at Nürburgring and nearly died. And then he was out for a few races and then came back, but retired in the Japanese Grand Prix because he was disgusted with the weather conditions and gave the title to James Hunt. That's basically what the film's going to be about, I'm sure.
You wouldn't have thought it was that good a viewing, really, would you? But there we go. No, and Eric Clapton. Did you see Eric Clapton grab as Blundell's doing his pit lane walk? He does Banderas, and then he goes on and he strides past these two blokes, and someone shouts, "Oi, oi, oi, oi!" and turns around, and Eric Clapton's called him back for an interview. So I don't know if they'd like arranged that he was going to be there and they were going to do the interview and he thought Brundle had missed him, but they're like, and then after Brundle's like, are you staying for later? Are you on the boat? Yeah. All right, I'll see you there then. And turns around and walks off. Different life, mate. On your boat, in your Ferrari.
Sounds like you had more celebrities on Sky.
A few.
We just had Ron Howard and Will Smith.
Ron Howard was on Sky as well as, but no, I've got to say, I do like the Sky coverage. It's very, very good. But the race was boring and I fell asleep from kind of lap 48 to lap 62. So,
I haven't fallen asleep yet.
And I've got to say,
many a time I've fallen asleep on many a race, but I've not fallen asleep across any of them this year.
I've made no effort whatsoever to catch up on what happened in between those races and things. There you go.
The most exciting part of the whole race was the possibility of rain near the end.
Yeah.
That was the most. Well, and then, of course, it rained after the race, which was like, oh.
It didn't do anything.
Could that have happened earlier?
No. I mean, it didn't rain in the middle, and it would have been really nice if it had, but we were deprived. I don't know that it would have made. I mean, it would have made a difference if they'd have all changed tyres and then it had rained and then they'd have had to go back in for wet, so whether they'd have stayed out with them or not. You can ride on the primes, can't you, in wet weather? They do. They have some traction in the wet, even if it's limited, but they're hardly slick. I think as well, there's another call for doing some points system that goes with pole. So there's like an alternative championship that's the pole championship, and whoever gets the most number of poles, you know, you get points for grid places. And it would give some of the lower sides an opportunity to get a few points and feel like they're mixing it up just on grid space. No?
Yeah, I think there's...
Go ahead, Steve. That's off.
I was just going to say, qualifying does feel less of Monaco is very important, but it does feel like it's getting less important because it gives them more opportunity to play with the tyres through the race, because that's the thing that for most races other than Monaco, that's the thing that's determining who's winning at the moment.
Sarah, are you going to say?
I mean, there's been thought about making giving points for getting pole for some time, and I don't know why they've not done it. Certainly for getting pole, I think that would be a good idea. Couple of points at least.
The pole cup. Good.
Well, I don't know about going that far. I mean, they do make a big thing out of it now. I mean, with the press conference, and they don't have podium or anything like that, but they still did the press conference, and you know, obviously we knew Shuey wasn't going to be on pole, but then he still did the press conference as if he'd got pole, which is, I guess that's good because that's the way it should be, but you know, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about pole. I think yes, probably a couple of points for pole, and that's about it. Really, I don't want to make too much of a big thing about it.
Yeah, no, that'd be good.
It's how you do on Sunday that counts, and as we've seen in some races, people have come from the back of the grid and won a race. So you can have a really rubbish Saturday and still win the race.
Any other comments about the race? I mean, we got old Mr. Webber wins. Well-deserved win?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I like you. Webber's a good guy, I think. I mean, I watched a programme that was on Sky afterwards about Webber, and he comes across as a really genuine bloke. He really does enjoy himself around the circuit. He's quite humble as well as. He's not a tosser like a few of them are. And you don't get the impression that he's a womaniser or a... you know, negative about other drivers.
Do you know what I thought was one of the most impressive performances on the race?
No.
Vettel.
Because he stayed out for 45 laps?
No, because, well, he did stay out for 45 laps, but when you were probably sleeping, between kind of lap 30 onwards, he was putting in better lap times than on his old tyres than the new guys. And he started off with a 10 or 8 second gap over the Weber, etc. behind him. And he stretched it out to about 15 seconds. So when he pitted, it was
17.2 seconds when he pitted.
Yeah, that was really impressive driving. Well done, Mr. Vettel.
Well, obviously, Super Chicken in the chat room is very happy that Mr. Webber got a title because of the fact he's Australian, so that would be there, even though I think he's a Tasmanian, isn't he, old Webber? And Jenks in the chat room saying, very happy Webber got a win, but he nodded off during the MotoGP race earlier in the year, so I don't know if he's only just woken up, perhaps, but...
Webber is the first Australian to win the Monaco Grand Prix twice, by the way. In case you didn't know that.
Yeah, didn't Alan Jones win it?
No, he was, Jack Brabham nearly won it twice. He got pipped on the last lap.
Yeah, but Jones won it once.
Yes, I'm sure he did in 1980.
Brabham won it once, yeah.
When he won his title. Mm-hmm. But Brabham nearly won it in 1970 as well, but he was pipped by Jochen Rindt.
Sky had a good interview with him. They had Alan Jones on with, what's his name, Steve Ryder, and they went to his Brisbane apartment to interview him. And basically, he's just like this typical Australian guy who calls a spade and just won't, you know. And he said, you know, you still hang around doing the stewardship and that kind of thing. Would you come back into racing, be an owner? Or he said, no, I can't stand the bloody political correctness, mate. Drives me mad. He said, everyone's got to be nice to everybody. You should say what you think. I was like, oh, blimey. And apparently, he was talking about racing for Surtees. And he said to John Surtees, every time I change gear, I graze my knuckles, so I want a bulb on the side. And John Surtees said, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. We could do symmetry on it, and we'll put it in for the design for next year's car. No, I want it for the next effing race. I've grazed my effing knuckles. Blimey.
Yeah, that's when they had gear sticks. Now, of course, it's all switches and it's electronic.
Well, even then, it was just straight forward and chunk, chunk, forwards and back, wasn't it? But... yeah.
Did you enjoy all the slow-mos of the cars going around that corner?
I got a bit tired of that, I have to say.
Me too.
That was, you know, the first few were nice, and there was a couple of nice ones with rubber sort of flailing off in slow motion and then a deer into the car again to show the marbling. But there was a good post, I'll see if we can find the picture. Marussia sent out a picture of one of their cars going through like one of the marble fields. And it was pretty bad. There was real bad marbling all over the place. Let's see if I can show this. I don't know if I can. But the marbling was really, really bad. And that's the thing I think with the super softs was that they were holding. They were obviously got a lot more depth to them than we'd originally thought. But the trouble was that they were ripping to pieces, and a lot of stuff was coming off them, but not enough to cause an issue. So let me just see if I can get, there we go, there's a picture of it. But that's pretty bad marbling. There was an awful lot of rubbish kicking around. And apparently as well, they end up with, because they have to open the street up in the evening after they've finished, they get a lot of problem with people walking around and partying on the streets, dropping alcohol or dropping suntan lotion or stuff like that. You know, lots and lots of debris goes on there. And apparently yesterday in qualifying, when he came in for new tyres before going out for his last attempt at a decent lap, Lewis Hamilton had two fag butts embedded in his car, in his wheels. So,
yeah, I was amazed about that as well. Yeah, I was amazed that during the race they were saying that apparently, you know, Raskas, which is the last bend, that whole area was open because the casino was open last night.
Well, the whole track's open.
Traveling across the track in the you know, at night time, night before the race.
The track is open from the minute they finish racing. Everything comes apart and people are driving cars around it. It's the normal streets. It goes back to a normal street.
This is between quali and the race last night.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. The whole place goes back to a town. The tracks doesn't stay segregated off. All the junctions open up and people drive cars around it. Most of the track you can't actually drive around in Monaco because it's against the one-way system.
Okay. And you were trying to cancel this earlier. I think this is an amazing kind of atmosphere and circuit, being able to do that.
Yeah, but you can get maps of the circuit, but you can't actually drive the circuit. You can drive every inch of it, but the problem is you can't drive it as they would drive it because it goes against the one-way system all the back through the casino and around the hairpin.
Unless you kind of take a Grand Theft Auto approach and just go for it.
Stuff it, yeah.
I'm sure the same is in Singapore, but I'm sure it is the wrong way around.
Be a bit more modern warfare approach.
Yeah.
Magic moment, Steve?
Other than beautiful Vettel just doing an amazing performance, my magic moment was I love the atmosphere that the Red Bull boat seemed to create, and the party afterwards that was on the red button on the BBC looked like a really good place to be. That looked quite good. Other magic moments.
Well, all parties are when you're sat in your loft by yourself drinking tea.
Yeah, well, I'll be there one day, maybe.
Next year, 1900 quid, mate. You and me, Sarah, get your pins there. So,
maybe.
Just the party on the F1 boat was your magic moment of the race. That sums up Monaco exactly, doesn't it?
Yeah, I struggled as well.
There you go, you see.
Vettel's performance was good. I was blown away by his.
So it's not a moment
to run those tyres a lot longer than everyone thought and a lot quicker.
Right.
Yeah, he did well.
Okay. Well, we'll let you have that one then, even though it's not a moment. But Sarah, what was yours?
I also struggled as well, but I think the best part of the race for me was the last 10 laps or so when we had the threat of rain and you got the top six cars all running around sort of as if it was the first lap of the race. I just thought that was quite exciting. The anticipation that are they going to come into the pits and it would completely shake the order up and who was going to jump first and whether it was going to rain. That was probably the best part of the whole race, I think.
Yeah,
so that's my magic moment.
Mine was prior to qualifying. And it was the interview that, what's her name did? I can't remember her name. The dark-haired lady off the Sky team. She's there talking to Schumacher, and she says, you know, so how are you approaching this with the grid penalty that you got from Spain? And he said, well, he said, I go around quickly, I put it on pole, I start on six, and I win the Grand Prix. And that it was just like a throwaway line. And then last night, yesterday afternoon, as soon as he just came round, then he's like 800th of a second faster than everyone else. I'm sitting there going, holy hell, bloody hell, he's done it. He's only gone and done it. And he's put himself on pole, gone back to six. And I was expecting him to do really, really well today. But Grosjean put paid to that, I think. And I don't think anyone's car that was involved in that start. And the other thing I thought with Grosjean, he looked like he deliberately moved across to block whoever it was challenging Raikkonen. I think he kind of fell on his sword a little bit in that first melee try and make sure that Raikkonen got out. Because as soon as they started off, they'd all gone round the slow starter on the left-hand side. And then he was going straight, and for no apparent reason other than just before you saw the Ferrari of Alonso, I think, just start to go ahead, and Grosjean came in across and blocked him. And then he was forced to come back outside because Raikkonen moved, and then he went into Schumacher against the wall.
I
thought he was blocking there illegally.
I think Alonso did make reference after the race at some point to the fact that he had contact with Grosjean at the start.
Yeah, no, Grosjean, I reckon, was definitely deliberately blocking them out from hitting. Jenks' favourite moment in the chat room was Kobayashi when he went airborne and took a wheel and popped and hopped. That hopping was actually nothing in comparison to the GP2 coverage. If you get to see the GP2 coverage, I mean, the dude's up the back and he's airborne. He's completely over the top of the car, like they were trying to mate or something. And Natalie Pinkham says, Jenks, thank you very much, mate. That's the lady.
So is it complete carnage like Belgium 98?
No, it wasn't. I mean, there was probably in the GP, in the Formula One, there was just the couple there, but in the GP2, I think they probably lost about eight cars in that shunt. But the thing was that there was like a dozen cars all behind the ones that had stopped because they were completely in. And one of the guys, he went into the wall, he just glancing blow of a guy that was spinning, shoved him straight into the wall, and his wheel just went wobble, 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 like really, really badly. And he ended up just taking his hands off like that because he'd have broken his thumbs if he hadn't. And the thing was, the wheels weren't moving. It was I don't know what it was. It was just some tension on the pinions on the rack, and it was just. And it was all over the place. But the GP2 was a very good race. The GP1 race and the GP2, or the first race and second race, were both very good. And Venezuela won the first one as well. So they're all saying it was an omen.
Pastor Maldonado would have been happy then.
Yes.
Do you know, they called a public holiday for Maldonado from his race last week, really? 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Oh, they've probably got a returning hero song, haven't they, or something. They'll be.
Yeah, we used a bit of a hero there.
Yeah.
Well, apparently as well, though, the Venezuelan oil companies have bought the drivers into seats. They paid £23 million to Williams to give Maldonado the seat. It's not a thing where Williams pay Maldonado. Maldonado's ticket.
Oh, I know. There's a few of them like that as well.
Seat, I mean, Carter Kane, I think, is like that because he can't bloody drive, that's for sure. He's the most pointless guy out there. There's no way on God's green earth that he should be allowed to race.
Yeah.
He should have his license removed. He's bloody
crap. Well, forget the request for someone to fly us out to Monaco for a four-day holiday then. If anyone wants a new F1 driver, I'll have a go.
Yeah, I'm sure you can.
If you can get £100 million worth of sponsorship for a team, I'm sure you'll probably get a drive.
I think you may be lacking the Venezuelan qualification, but...
Yeah, you need to come from a country that's obscure and hasn't. Sorry, I don't mean that to insulting to Venezuelan, but Maldonado is the first real F1 driver. So you need to come from a country where they're not really known for their F1 drivers, Steve.
Wales.
Those well
known. Name one Welsh.
I don't, because that's going to offend somebody.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, don't well, you forget Dayboy Jones. I know, I'm talking of accents. What about Rob Smedley with Massa?
Yeah, he's good, isn't he?
What an accent. You could just see Massa calling in and asking for some advice, and Smedley going, right, lad, now then, we're going to go for the Emmerdale plan. The Emmerdale plan. Okay,
yeah.
Here we go.
Massa's just scratching his head, trying to understand him, yeah.
Listen, son, come in for some tyres. Don't be a pufter.
I think Massa was supporting Manchester City for the football recently, because that's what Smedley is.
Right.
So it's kind of rubbing off on him more than you think. He'll probably talk with his accent soon as well.
Just imagine Massa getting to, what's your favourite food, Massa, Felipe? And he goes, pies. He says it with a right and all that, pies. I want pies and gravy. Pies, chips and gravy. Oh, yes.
I do like Rob Smedley. He's probably because of certain things that have happened, he's probably the most high-profile race engineer in F1.
By the end of the season, I'm going to have his voice down to a combination of the Churchill dog and Bernard Manning. We'll do some sketches. Hello, Felipe. Come in now.
That's if Felipe's still driving for Ferrari by the end of the season.
Oh, we'll still do it anyway. He'll be there by the end of the season. I mean, he's tried this week, hasn't he?
Yeah, he didn't do too badly.
Did all right, got qualifying. So, well done. This podcast and lots of others would not be possible without UK2.net. They keep us afloat. They're the logo just down here underneath me. We've now got 12 shows on the network. If you go to our website down the left-hand side, you will see a very proud list of 12 shows. We've got Paul Wheatley, who's doing the Gamer Show with his two mates, and Andy Lee's chipped in, and Street Machines chipped in with the iOS show, and I've probably missed some people out there who, please don't disrespect it. John Hume's dived in on the web show. Sarah, you're doing the web show as well.
I am,
with yes. Paul Wheatley and a couple of others did that yesterday, and I've listened to the Gamer Show, love it to bits. It's a podcast of choice. iOS show, a lot more geeky to do with Apple. It's not just a replica of the Apple show, because we all know nothing on the Apple show. Well, I don't anyway. And I've yet to listen to the web show. I'm going to have a listen to it this week when I'm driving. But we've got some cracking shows now. They're all high quality shows. So please, please, please go along and have a listen. When the two new ones are available on iTunes, I'll tweet it out and they'll get added in. But there's a big selection of stuff for you to have a listen to, and UK2 pick up the bandwidth on every single show, no matter what. So that storage of data that we've got that flies around is is getting picked up by them. If you want to take something from them, then please use our click-through. If you don't, we won't get kudos for it. You could get the codes off any website if they've got them and just say, oh, here's a voucher code for, and you can get some money off. If you go to our website, click on uk2.net, takes you through. They'll know that we sent you. And when you put in your offer code, you can put in British Tech, and then all you have to do is add in VPS for VPS discount, VPN for VPN discount, domains for domain discount, DNS for DNS discount, and so on. Yeah, just try a few words at the end of it and see what happens. Who knows? You might get the golden Willy Wonka ticket out of it. We'll see. Try British Tech Ewan Rankin. See what happens. British Tech Ewan. Maybe I might get free stuff on that. I'll have to give that a go. They're great. Please support them. We go away without them. And they'll be there, I think, at the Bash as well. Now, the Bash is going to happen on the 6th of July. It's going to be here in Birmingham. We've got a 5-acre field to play around in. We've got a pig roast. We've got TechSmith are sponsoring us for a pile of food and beer. Andy and Natco's coming over from the States, so he should be having a good time. And also, Paul Kirkle, who's the iPad artist, has done 3 very special pictures that are all Bash related, and we're going to be selling those prints on the day with an A3 printer, and he'll sign them, I'll sign them, Andy and Nat will sign them, whoever you want to sign them will sign them, and I was going to get one done of everybody who attends is going to sign it as well, so, and we'll get that up in the wall in the in British Tech HQ. Any money that we get from those, though, is going to go to Will Green's charity, which is NSPCC, so it's not we're pocketing the money. And there's some real crackers. There's one that I'm going to get made into a T-shirt as soon as it's finished. But thanks to Paul for doing those. And it's going to be a good fun time. Go to our website. There's a big banner up. Click on that banner. It takes you through to eventbrite.co.uk, where you can buy your ticket. Tickets are £20 a piece. But all of the money that goes from that will go to getting a NACU over and buying beer and that kind of stuff. So there'll be some stuff there. Bring a bit of carry out yourself as well, because we've got the field until we fall over. And I'm going to bring a tent and pitch it on the ground. I ain't even going to try and start driving backwards and forwards. We'll have power. Andy Lee's going to make a super MiFi for everyone to link into. We're going to do all the shows from the whole network through that day. So there'll be 12 shows recorded that day. And we'll be off and running. There you go. Should be great. 6th of July. Don't be late. It's a month away now. Coming closer, isn't it? Coming closer and closer.
Yes.
Next GP is going to be... according to the list, Canada. Now, I've got to say, I'm disappointed, because Istanbul used to be here, didn't it?
Turkey, yes.
Turkey used to be here, and I liked that circuit. It was long and open and flowing, and I have driven it, and it's long and open and flowing, and there's some really nice bends in it. So we're not going to be there. We're going to be at Canada, which is okay, but a little bit boring, I thought, apart from the hairpin at the one end.
Apart from the fact that last year's race was the most exciting race of the year.
And we're all hoping it's going to piss down.
Yeah, bring on the rain.
That's what we need.
And Jensen to win from the back of the grid again.
That's the one thing that gets me about the Xbox game. The real F1 game, I've only had 2 races where there hasn't been rain at some point during either qualifying or practice. And that's just not realistic. Most places there's no rain.
That's right, yeah.
So you'd have like three races will be affected by rain in a year would be high, I would have thought so.
Apart from Malaysia, of course, where it rains virtually every year.
Peter says, is the money from the sale of the prints going to Steve's F1 driver fund?
Get him to Monaco, yeah.
I think I might die before we raise enough money for that, unfortunately. I've got 2 things for you.
Go on, then.
First one, I've been meaning to do this one for about 3 months and I haven't. So I need to apologise to Paul, but Paul sent me some links that I'll send over to you, Ewan, if you want to put them in the show notes. They're links to enable people to watch the stuff if you haven't got Sky. So if you want to put those in, then you could have a look.
Yes, please, send them over.
And then the second thing, it's available. I'm not sure if it's still on the iPlayer, but did anyone see the BBC documentary that they held about F1 when it was dangerous?
Yeah, they did the thing on 15 drivers, didn't they?
They've done a while ago, wasn't it?
It was on May the 14th. It was broadcast.
Yeah.
It's called Grand Prix: The Killer Years.
1 to 2 per year or something.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
It's absolutely brilliant. If you, I'm sure it'll be available somewhere. It's called Grand Prix, The Killer Years. It was a BBC 4 production, and it basically covered the 1960s and 1970s. And I didn't know the extent of the carnage that the F1 was in then.
I think
absolutely blew me away, that TV program.
Steve, I think that's been on before, because I'm sure I remember seeing it before. I remember learning about how Jack Brabham got killed. I think it was at Nürburgring. How his car took off and hit a tree.
Yes, that was featured. I'm not sure whether it's the same program as before. I'm looking at the write-up now. It doesn't say it's a repeat, but yeah, no, it's a top program.
You call it The Killer Years.
Yeah, Grand Prix, The Killer Years.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not showing up in. It's not showing up in iPlayer Automator.
It's too late, is it? It's more than a week.
Yeah, sorry, I should have mentioned it when I watched it a few weeks ago. But there's a scene at the end of it that is just I hadn't seen this before, and yeah, I won't spoil it, but yeah, really good program.
So you've got a link to where to get that?
I've got a link to. I'll have a look for a link. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. That'd be great. Send that through, and I shall put it up. We'll be back again in a couple of weeks' time. It's going to be the what's the date? The Canadian Grand Prix is going to be the 8th of June. So it's 2 weeks away.
Yes.
Two weeks. 2 weeks away. So we'll see you in 2 weeks' time on the Sunday night, about 8 o'clock in the evening. Have a great time. Thanks for. Where can we get a hold of you? Sorry, I forgot about that. Steve?
Clothhead HQ on Twitter or the London Mac News Group.
Next meeting is
londonmacuser.org.
Next meeting's a week on Tuesday.
Monday.
A week on Monday, sorry.
Which is the WDC keynote event.
Bank holiday.
It's June the 11th.
Fourth.
No, the next meeting is June the 11th, which is the WDC keynote.
Ooh. It's 2 weeks' time.
So, expecting big things. We're going to do a live show. Have you got a new venue yet or not?
I don't think I've got a new venue that we can afford. So, we're going to probably do it at the Wood. We'll do it with the free screens. We'll put up all the blogs that we can. If I'd like to do a show during the event, if we can, I think that would work better than maybe trying to do a show afterwards. So, that's the plan if you want to do that.
I want to do one during.
Offline if you're...
No, I want to do one during, not after. Definitely.
Yeah.
And I want to be. I want to be the other end.
Well, the obvious choice there is the F1 show, because that's 2 days after the Grand Prix.
Yes. No, it's the day after.
Yeah, the day after. Be right. Sorry. Yeah.
10th. Oh, I'm lost.
9th and 10th of June. 9th and 10th is the Grand Prix.
So we'll have to do it on the Sunday night, because the Monday we'll all be down at the Wood.
Yeah.
Thanks for that great bit of organisation to finish the podcast off. Sarah, where can we get hold of you?
You can get hold of me on the Twitters at Sarah Jane UK, and now on the web show every 2 weeks.
And you can get hold of me, Ewan Rankin, on at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, and you can also get us at British Tech News on Twitter as well, if you want to follow network updates and that kind of stuff. Just want to finish off by saying thank you to Aaron, who's the first person to leave a review for the F1 show on the on iTunes. With the start of the new season, this podcast is a must. Sarah, you and Steve and the rest of the team deliver a debrief of the week's action with some fun along the way. There we go.
Oh, thanks, Aaron.
That's very kind
of
you.
Thank you, Aaron.
Somebody actually listens.
If you'd like to leave us a review, please do. All the shows need them, especially the video ones. Please leave a review, and we'll read them out if you send them in, including the bad ones. You can say whatever you like. We read a bad one out on Friday. It's okay. I don't mind. And also, I think we should have a competition with conversations between Rob Smedley and Felipe Massa. There we go. You send me a script for conversations between Rob Smedley and Felipe Massa, and I'll send you a copy of some software. There you go, a license from TechSmith. All right, get writing. That'd be cool. See you again soon. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.